106.6. Okay, so that was Joe Walsh with Analog Man. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, there's some news, plus the charts, and look at what's new on TV. Now, DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go there now. And also, if you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. Okay, so in the show this week, in the first hour, it's all about films. And we start off with Noomi Rapace, who searches for the meaning of life in Prometheus at the cinema. And then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, including Your Sister's Sister and Killer Joe. And also the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, including Young Adult with Charlize Theron and Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance with Nicolas Cage. Okay, so we started with Prometheus, and it's the first full feature film which I've seen in IMAX, and it felt like being shouted at in the face for a full 2 hours, but in a good way. I've only ever seen one film previously in IMAX, and that was a short film of around 40 minutes, many moons ago, the content of which I've completely forgotten about. In fact, the IMAX is probably the closest thing you can get to a theme park experience without travelling too far, and given I've spent enough of my life in Alton Towers, it's not somewhere I particularly want to go back to. So if I can get the same kind of thrill ride at the Odeon in Manchester, I'll be a frequent visitor to that screen. One of the earliest moments in the film to behold was a simple one, as we see Dr. Elizabeth Shaw, Noomi Rapace from the original Girl with a Dragon Tattoo trilogy, uncovering something which we later find out to be a tomb containing a mysterious massive stone head, and scores of pods that look like enclosed lava lamps, but opaque ones, for which there wouldn't really be much of a market. Anyway, imagine you have a big screen full of mud, and someone from the other side claws a big hole in it. Well, sorry, claws a small hole in it, rather. Then you have Noomi's face staring back at you, filling the screen as she tries to see what's on the other side. Naturally, from her point of view, it's not us. Another moment comes when we see David, Michael Fassbender, this movie's automaton, pottering about on the ship Prometheus before waking everyone out of hypersleep. The camera has a fixed viewpoint, but the 3D is very effective and it really makes you feel like you're there watching him. So, what exactly is the film about? Well, everyone wants to know the answer to life, the universe and everything, and in short, so do they. However, like a lot of other sci-fi films in which you start exploring tombs that have remained silent for many centuries, accidentally stepping on something you shouldn't, leads to something disturbing that should have stayed asleep, and therefore the end of the world as we know it is imminent. Basically, the safe money dictates that they should have stayed home, made a cuppa, and put their feet up for homes under the hammer. But that wouldn't have made very engaging viewing, would it? That said, Homes Under the Hammer wouldn't be particularly thrilling in IMAX, but we do see a segment of Lawrence of Arabia in 3D, of which David is clearly a big fan. When it comes to the cast, leading the way are the lovers Drs. Elizabeth Shaw, of Rapace, and Charlie Holloway, Logan Marshall Green, who discovered a sort of map a couple of years earlier, on the Isle of Skye. Well, they didn't see it as a map, more of an invitation to head to the middle of nowhere in deep space and meet with the aliens. Charlize Theron plays Meredith Vickers, owner of the Prometheus itself, and who has her own separate living quarters so she doesn't have to associate with the hoi polloi for as long as is necessary. Yes, she's rather a snob and has such an expressionless face for most of the time that you know, others would think she's a robot too. Guy Pearce is the elderly Peter Weyland, founder of the Weyland Corporation, whose name is synonymous throughout the Alien saga, and who pops up early on to give a holographic lecture about what the team are about to face once they've arrived at their destination. Now, I didn't realise it was Pearce as I was watching him, as the makeup is done to make him look ancient, although he does look more like David Attenborough would in about another 10 years. The rest of the crew is made up of ship's captain, Janik, Idris Elba, and the other workers, the aggressive Fifield, Sean Harris, plus Milburn, Rafe Spall with a dodgy American accent, Ford, Kate Dickey, notable only for being the other female on board and for having an incomprehensible Scots accent, plus Chase, Emin Elliott, and Ravel, Benedict Wong. The latter two spend so little time on screen it's a wonder they are included in the script. Their only conversation is about a bet over something where the winner gets 100 credits. I lost track of what this was about, however. Yes, Prometheus is technically an alien prequel, but don't think about that too much while watching it, as you'll be wondering why the computer graphics and terminals featured are far more advanced here than in the 1979 movie. For example, there, everyone used CRT monitors to display the information, whereas here, they're not only able to map an underground set of tunnels with some Wizzo red sparkly things, they also feed back to the ship with a 3D virtual map that completes in real time in front of the crew. There are some moments which feel like they come straight out of Alien, which made me feel like we were treading water for a while, hence it's not a 10 for the film itself, such as seeing the crew being brought out of hypersleep and share their first breakfast after coming round. Yes, there are essential scene-setting moments, and there's no way around that, but you do rather feel like you want to get to the meat of the story much sooner. One thing I wondered, however, was that I understand the IMAX screen ratio is 1.44 to 1, but there was a small black bar at the top giving an impression of a 16:9 ratio. But I tried to work out how that will compare to that version will compare to a 2.35 to 1 conventional ratio for this film. I got the impression during the film that I was watching a mixture of cropped and open matte shots. You know, e.g., if a face filled the screen, then it was cropped, but there are others that had the impression of being open matte, which is when it sort of looks like the black bars have been removed in a way. That's sort of the simplest description. Thanks, however, to Libretio on Digital Spies forums who answered my query. He said, in most cases, they letterbox the entire 2.35 to 1 frame across the middle of the IMAX screen with large black bars top and bottom. Since the image is so big anyway, those bars aren't that much of a problem. The IMAX version of the Polar Express was 2.00 to 1, and Apollo 13 was 1.66 to 1. So a few films do opt for an open frame version for large format exhibition, especially for something like Prometheus, which was shot at 16:9 and framed for 2.35, or both in this case, which compromises both ratios, but that's another discussion, he said. Excuse me. Okay, so overall, Prometheus is a film well worth seeing. It's not perfect, and as such, just gets 8 out of 10 from me, but if you do get a chance to see it in IMAX, then it quickly upgrades it to a must-see. It took me a little while to get used to the IMAX effect, given how massive the screen is, and there are occasional moments where the effect is a little blurred. But overall, it's fantastically impressive, and when there's text on screen early on, it just feels like it's just floating in the air in front of realistic action. It's just unbeatable. So, 8 out of 10 for the film, but 10 out of 10 for the experience, definitely. But, okay, so that's my review of Prometheus, and it's a film that's eely, eely good. Yeah, if you've seen the film, you'll know what I'm referring to. Either way, while the rest of you are confused, I'm going to play a bit of music before we go into the top 10 movie charts. And it's going to be Thomas Dolby and Airhead. And this one goes out especially for a good friend of mine, John Lavely, in Illinois. So here we go, Thomas Dolby and Airhead. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, so you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and this section we're going to have a look at the top 10 movie charts. And as I said before, I'll go through the US movie charts here, because for a while I could never find a reliable source for the UK ones, but I just find them more interesting anyway. But we start with number one, which is, it's always a good place to start, which is Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. Yeah, I'm excited already about it. It's taken $34.1 million in this week and $119 million overall so far. Now, Alex, Marty, Gloria and Melman are still trying to get back to the Big Apple with their beloved Central Park Zoo. But first, they need to find the penguins. Oh, dear. When they travel to Monte Carlo, they attract the attention of animal control after gate-crashing a party and are joined by the penguins, King Julian and co, the monkeys and a new arrival, a performing llama. How do a lion, zebra, hippo, giraffe, four penguins, two monkeys, three lemurs, and a llama travel through Europe without attracting attention? They join a travelling circus. Wow. It stars Ben Stiller, Chris Rock, David Schwimmer, Jada Pinkett Smith, Sacha Baron Cohen, Frances McDormand, Jessica Chastain, Bryan Cranston, and Martin Short. So, decent cast, but if I sound bored, it's because it's a CGI film. And, They're 10 a penny. They really are. 5-year-olds will like them. 3-year-olds will like them. My nephew's 3. He'll love this, but I'll pass. Just not my bag at all. Number two, we've got Prometheus, which took $20.7 million this week and has taken $89.4 million overall. It's already been covered in the first segment, so do make sure you go and see that. Obviously in IMAX if you can do. Number three, we've got Rock of Ages, Now, set in 1987 Los Angeles, Drew and Sherry are two young people chasing their dreams in the big city. When they meet, it's love at first sight, though their romance will face a series of challenges. It's a film adaptation of the 2006 Chris D'Arienzo comedy rock stroke jukebox Broadway musical of the same name. It's difficult to get any words out there. It stars country singer Julianne Hough and Diego Boneta, with an ensemble cast including Tom Cruise, Russell Brand, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Paul Giamatti, Maylin Akerman, Bryan Cranston, with Alec Baldwin and Mary J. Blige. That's what I call her. The film has the music of Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, Def Leppard, Foreigner, Journey, Poison, Europe and Twisted Sister. And I don't really go in for musicals. And while Tom Cruise really does, well, usually pulls out all the stops to do something different, I think this is one performance I'm going to give a miss to. It's also done very badly for an opening week as well, because it's taken $14.4 million in America in its opening week, and it cost $75 million to make. So, given that film has to make about three times back what it spends to include the costs of promotion, it's game over for this one, I think. Not unless it becomes like Showgirls and ends up doing so badly that it ends up being good. No, it's still bad, but it had a cult following anyway. Number four, we have That's My Boy. Another film to get excited about. It took $13.5 million in its opening week. Why am I getting not very excited about it? Well, you'll hear by some of the next words that I say. While still in his teens, Donnie, Adam Sandler, fathered a son, Todd, Andy Samberg, and raised him as a single parent up until Todd's 18th birthday. Now, after not seeing each other for years, Todd's world comes crashing down on the eve of his wedding when an uninvited Donnie suddenly shows up. Trying desperately to reconnect with his son, Donnie is now forced to deal with the repercussions of his bad parenting skills. Also starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead, this looks like any other Adam Sandler film, but with lots of added F-words, so I think I'll pass. Excuse me. Number five, we've got Snow White and the Huntsman, which, you know, I think it's had it's taken $122 million in America so far. I think it's done pretty well, had some reasonable reactions, but I don't know, all I can see is it just seems to star Kristen Stewart as a 12-year-old boy, Snow White, plus Chris Hemsworth as the Huntsman, with Charlize Theron popping up again, Ian McShane, Bob Hoskins, Ray Winston, Nick Frost, Eddie Marsden and Toby Jones. And the trailer just sent me into a coma quicker than eating a poison apple. There's just too much Snow White at the moment, with the equally dreadful looking Mirror Mirror and some similar dross on Channel 5. But if you do want to see the trailer, then they're all on the Facebook page. So go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Number six, we have Men in Black 3, which, it's taken $153 million so far, and in this one, an alien criminal kills the young Agent K in 1969, altering the timeline, changing the agency and placing the Earth in danger. Veteran Agent J, Will Smith, must travel back in time to 1969 to before the murder and work with the young Agent K, Josh Brolin, to save him, the agency, the Earth and humanity itself. Also starring Tommy Lee Jones for about 5 minutes, as Mark Kermode put it, this is a sequel that no one was waiting for, since the first film was brilliant, but the second was rubbish, and the trailer for this just really doesn't grab me at all. And Will Smith is just the same in everything, and I think I've had enough of him, really. Number seven, we've got Avengers Assemble, which has taken $587 million to date. Number eight, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Number nine, Moonrise Kingdom, which is the latest film from Wes Anderson, which I do still want to see. And number 10 is, obviously, the last one, and that's Battleship. Okay, so that's the top 10 movies for this week, and now I'll have a bit of music before we go into the new cinema releases out this Friday, and I'm going to go and have a great big glass of water. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Your Sister's Sister. And by the way, all the trailers for all the films on the Facebook page, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And in Your Sister's Sister, Iris invites her friend Jack to stay at a family's island getaway after the death of his brother. At the remote cabin, Jack's drunken encounter with Hannah, Iris's sister, kicks off a revealing stretch of days. It's a bit of a... That's about it, basically, for the description. Starring Emily Blunt as Iris and Rosemary DeWitt as Hannah, also with Mark Duplass as Jack, I got seriously bored watching this trailer. Emily Blunt is good-looking, but she's appearing in many American movies these days, all with a token British accent. So watch one of those instead. I recommend The Adjustment Bureau. That was brilliant. Also this week we have Friends with Kids, which it's like Friends with Benefits, but taking it one step further. Two best friends decide to have a child together while keeping their relationship platonic, so they can avoid the toll kids take on romantic relationships. Yeah. Starring Adam Scott, Jennifer Westfeldt, who also wrote and directed it, also Christine Wiig and Chris O'Dowd, Megan Fox and Edward Burns. Well, this is two for two in terms of tedious trailers. The two friends get together, they have a kid, and when they each attempt to date someone else, you know, you just know it's going to end up with the two of them getting together properly towards the very end. Dull, dull, dull. Avoid. So what hope have we got for the next film? Exit Humanity, which is a young man's struggle to survive in the aftermath of a deadly undead outbreak during the American Civil War. Well, starring Brian Cox, Mark Gibson, Dee Wallace and Bill Moseley, I'm afraid this will not help add to the lineup of recommendable films out this week. It's a zombie film set during the American Civil War, but just as you see some of the baddies bumped off, it's done with a load of pontificating over the top of it, which just makes you want to fall asleep. There was a 4-minute trailer as well, which was bad enough. So let's see what's up next. Oh dear, it's Joyful Noise, which is the story of a small town choir out to win a national competition despite overwhelming odds. A story of faith and determination by the choir leaders, Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton, and the young talent who give their all to win God's praise and beat the competition for the grand prize. Hallelujah. Starring Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton, this has predictable written all over it. Dolly herself was entertaining on BBC Breakfast last week, singing a couple of her songs, Note Perfect, when in her time zone it was 3 a.m. This is one film I'll avoid like the plague. Queen Latifah is part of a gospel choir, so you know how that's going to go. And I had to switch the trailer off when I heard a Michael Jackson song being sung, as he's long outstayed his welcome with me. Okay, so it's on to the last film that's out this Friday, and it's called Killer Joe. When a debt puts a young man's life in danger, he turns to putting a hit out on his evil mother in order to collect the insurance. Directed by William Friedkin, who also did The Exorcist, a film which I didn't really like the film itself, but I really did enjoy the making of it, which just seems weird. I enjoyed that a lot more than the film. I don't know how my brain works, God alone knows. The film also stars Matthew McConaughey, Emile Hirsch, Juno Temple, Thomas Hayden Church and Gina Gershon. And all hopes rest on this film as the one to watch this week. And I think it certainly is. I last saw McConaughey in one of his slick roles in The Lincoln Lawyer, and here he is in a bad guy role, probably the first time I've seen him do that. And he's always worth a watch anyway. The trailer was stylish and never made me bored, and unlike the rest of the films on view this week, so this one I think is a must-see. So at least we have one film worth watching. And with that, we're going to have a bit of music before I bring you a roundup of the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we have a look at the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, starting with Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. This is a sequel to 2007's Ghost Rider and features Nicolas Cage returning to the starring role as Johnny Blaze. It's also the second film to be released under the Marvel Knights banner after 2008's Punisher Warzone. It was directed by Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, from scripts written by David S. Goyer, Scott Gimple and Seth Hoffman. But is there a plot? Well, as Johnny Blaze hides out in Eastern Europe, he's called upon to stop the devil, who is trying to take on human form. It also stars Kieran Hines, Idris Elba and Johnny Whitworth. I never saw the original film, but this also comes from the directors who made the two Crank films with Jason Statham, and also Gamer starring Gerard Butler and Dexter's Michael C. Hall. Well, the trailer made me laugh a few times, so it does seem worth a look. I also asked on the Internet Movie Database as to whether I could watch this without having seen the first one, and the answer was yes. They cover the backstory again anyway, so you missed nothing. By the way, of course, all the trailers are on the DVD Fever Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Also this week we have The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which is still in the top 10 of American films. And it follows a group of British retirees who decide to outsource their retirement to less expensive and seemingly exotic India. Enticed by advertisements for the newly restored Marigold Hotel, and bolstered with visions of a life of leisure, they arrive to find the palace a shell of its former self. Though the new environment is less luxurious than imagined, they're forever transformed by their shared experiences, discovering that life and love can begin again when you let go of the past. Starring Maggie Smith, Bill Nighy, Judi Dench, Dev Patel and Tom Wilkinson, the trailer just played out like a British farce and just really didn't grab me at all. But then, I'm not a middle-aged woman, or a pensioner woman, like my mum. She loves this, I think. I'm sure she saw this. It's not for men at all. Also this week we have The Vow, another film that's not really for men at all either. A car accident puts Paige, Rachel McAdams, in a coma. Sadly, it doesn't put the writer in a coma either. May as well have been. And when she wakes up with a severe memory loss, her husband Leo, Channing Tatum, works to win her heart again. Giving the film 2.5 stars out of 4, Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times found it a pleasant enough as a date movie, but that's all. USA Today wrote that it may appeal to the most rabid fans of tear-jerk romances like The Notebook, but it's a hard-to-swallow maudlin tale. Also starring Jessica Lange and Sam Neill, this looks like a syrupy romantic mess. I do not want to see it. Okay, so that's the first lot of new releases out this week. I'm going to have a bit of music, and then I'll be back with the rest of the new Blu-rays and DVDs out now. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, so you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6 for the last part of this first hour. We continue our look at the DVDs out this week, including The Innkeepers. And after 100 years of service, the Yankee Pedlar Inn is shutting its doors for good. The last remaining employees, Claire, Sarah Paxton, and Luke, Pat Healy, are determined to uncover proof of what many believe to be one of New England's most haunted hotels. As the inn's final days draw near, odd guests check in as a pair of minimum wage ghost hunters begin to experience strange and alarming events that may ultimately cause them to be mere footnotes in the hotel's long unexplained history. The trailer itself is an oddity, and it just feels like it uses ideas from too many films that have gone before and just comes across as a confusing mess, so I'm not going to be visiting this inn at all. Also this week we have Young Adult, where Mavis Gary, a writer of teen literature, returns to a small hometown to relive her glory days and attempt to reclaim her happily married high school sweetheart. When returning home proves more difficult than she thought, Mavis forms an unusual bond with a former classmate who hasn't quite got over high school either. And starring Charlize Theron, I've heard good things about it, and it does look brilliant, so I really do want to see this. Some of the films out this week. We've got A Dangerous Method. That's the David Cronenberg film. Hunky Dory. Soldier of Vengeance with Steven Seagal. Howl's Moving Castle. And Wanderlust. Some TV series and other things. We have CSI Miami Season 9. Friday Night Lights Season 1 and Friday Night Light Feature Film Pack. Well, a double bill of both of them anyway. We have Pink Floyd, The Story of Wish You Were Here, which was on BBC4 a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned that on the programme. I really, really enjoyed that. And they also have something I don't enjoy, The Ricky Gervais Show Season 2. Then there's Shameless USA Season 1, which I watched a bit of the first episode of that, and William H. Macy plays Frank Gallagher, and he's barely in it. First episode, he's barely in it. Rubbish. Silk Series 2, True Love Series 1, which I'll come on to later, and also a Stephen Fry collection of 6 DVDs, including Life of the Manic Depressive, Stephen Fry in America, Wagner and Me, and Last Chance to See. And there's also some Blu-ray premieres. We've got Abel Ferrara's King of New York, The Aristocats, Borgen Series 1, Double Indemnity, The Lost Weekend. Double Indemnity and The Lost Weekend, both classics from Eureka, where there's a single disc version available, as well as a a slightly more expensive steelbook version, around about £18. There's also The Man from Snowy River, Pinocchio, Roxy Music, Live at the Apollo, Stone Temple Pilots, Alive in the Windy City, Teaching Mrs. Tingle, and Yellow Sky. Okay, coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with the Top 10 Games Charts. But first of all, we're going to have a bit of music to take us up to the top of the hour. And this one goes out especially for Nita Lumiere, who has an engaging advice column on her website, nitalumiere.com. This is Glen Campbell and Rhinestone Cowboy. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Editors with Papillon. And you're back for the second hour of the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And this in the second hour, starts off with video game stuff, where we have a look at the top 10 games charts, then some new video games releases, and look at some video games news. And then we can move on to TV, where we have a look back at some TV from the past week, including Dead Boss, Veep, and True Love, and also look ahead to some more programmes coming up. So we start with the top 10 games charts, with number 1, which is FIFA 12, number 2, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier, number 3, Max Payne 3, number 4, Lollipop Chainsaw, number 5, Battlefield 3, number 6, Diablo 3, there's a lot of 3s, number 7, Game of Thrones, number 8, Sniper Elite V2, and number 9, Mario and Sonic at the London 2012 Olympics, and number 10, Dirt Showdown. There's a new entry at number 11 for Gravity Rush on the PlayStation Vita, and re-entries for Sonic Generators at number 26, and number 35, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. Excuse me. So we move on to the games out this Friday, and start off with, it's a bit thin on the ground, to be honest, but, you know, we'll see. Start off with the Ratchet & Clank Trilogy, which is like one of these compilations of games. Remastered in HD on the PS3, which says two PlayStation heroes are back to relive their first three adventures, remastered in stunning HD for the PS3. Head back to where it all began in three classic PS2 hits: Ratchet & Clank, Ratchet & Clank 2, and Ratchet & Clank 3. There you go. All on one Blu-ray disc. Load up on zany weapons and cool gadgets, and show off your skills on the hunt for PlayStation Network trophies. Enjoy the dynamic duo's quest in a thrilling new dimension with stunning stereoscopic 3D support. I played a bit of Ratchet & Clank on the PS2 at the time, but not really the kind of thing that's my bag, to be honest. They're a bit tedious. And they never change, they never improve. Also this week we have The Amazing Spider-Man. Where if you did get it through Amazon, they have a Rhino Challenge pre-order bonus. Go beyond the movie to experience what it's like to be Spider-Man like never before, it says here. Set shortly after the events of Columbia Pictures' new film, The Amazing Spider-Man throws New York City's brand new hero back into free-roaming, web-slinging action as he protects the Big Apple from a deluge of unimaginable threats. Experience a new web-rush mechanic as Spidey twists his way through the New York City skyline with unprecedented speed and grace. The game's original story also explores beautiful indoor environments, as you'll encounter everything from skirmishes with everyday street thugs to pulse-pounding confrontations with Spider-Man's most lethal foes. And from the gameplay clip of Spider-Man taking on a charging rhino, which I've put on the Facebook page, you go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, I'm not overly impressed by it. It's just gameplay by numbers, and every now and again it just says, press Y to dodge, etc. You know, just... it's tedious. It's just like no thought's gone into it whatsoever. It's like a whole load of other games that come out before and they're just replaced. I don't know. It reminds me of a game of the way it shows in the gameplay clip of the minigame that has the Bourne Identity. And it's like they just replaced Jason Bourne with Spider-Man running around a lot faster. Rubbish. Also this week we have Metal Gear Solid HD Collection on the PlayStation Vita. But it's not much of a collection because it's only got Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3. In Metal Gear Solid 2, players take on the role of a one-man army determined to stop a deadly high-tech weapon from falling into the hands of a highly elite resistance group known as Dead Cell. Players must utilise their skills in stealth, weaponry and counter-terrorism to fight off the competing powers, progress through a twisting storyline and eventually face the gigantic war machine Metal Gear Ray. Metal Gear Solid 3, in the struggle to achieve world peace and world dominance in the Cold War period, rivaling governments are secretly developing weapons technology that could threaten the future existence of life. Destined to be the first, a race ensues to become the ultimate nation. A special elite tactical soldier is summoned to penetrate deep in the heart of enemy territory and obtain intel about Metal Gear, a prototype weapon with nuclear capabilities. This is your mission, and you must infiltrate alone. As Naked Snake, you must outsmart enemies with camouflage, close quarters combat, stalking, interrogating, climbing, hunting, and treating injuries in this critical chapter of the Metal Gear saga. Now, you don't get Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, nor the original 8-bit games, which you do get in the PS3 and Xbox versions. When it comes to the games themselves, I get a bit bored of them after a while, and in terms of stealth, they just don't do anything for me, like what I'd get from Sock'em games on the PSP and Hitman games on the Xbox. And also this week we have London 2012, the official video game of the Olympic Games. That's on Xbox 360 and PS3. The Olympic Games are responsible for some of the most memorable scenes in sporting history. It's a global stage where dreams are realised, heroes are made, and the moments that will be remembered for years happen right before your eyes. Now you too can create your own moments with this game. With new sports, new events, and new gameplay modes, London 2012 brings the world's ultimate sporting event to life bigger and better than ever before. Take to the track, negotiate the velodrome, and dive into the deep end in stunning HD while you compete for the pride of your nation. Hone your skills in the Olympic Games mode and play with or against your friends and family in a variety of multiplayer modes. Create your own golden moments only with 2012 and London 2012, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You get the idea from this. The trailer gives a flavour of the graphics, but all these games which allow you to play lots of different events in one package always end up falling short. Generally because the events just end up so samey. I've been playing games like this since the ZX Spectrum came out in the 80s. We had Daley Thompson's Decathlon. Ah, them were the days. But yeah, just you get several other games, and it's like you get a 100-meter dash, and you get a 200-meter run, and an 800-meter. It's just like just sitting there button bashing forever. Pass. Okay, so that's the top 10 games charts and new releases out this Friday. We're going to have a bit of music, and then I'll be back with this week's video games news. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we're going to have a look at some new, video games news out this week. Starting with the news that Nintendo have announced the 3DS XL, which is coming out on July the 28th. And it will feature larger screens and improved battery life. The screen has increased in size from 3.58 inches to 4.88 inches. I'm sure you'll be pleased with that, ladies. You're always about the inches. While the lower screen has gone up from 3.02 inches to 4.18 inches, giving the players a total of 90% more screen space, with the unit as a whole measuring 156 by 93 by 22 millimeters, compared to the original's slightly smaller size. The battery life will increase from 3.5 to 6.5 hours when playing 3DS games, and up to 10 hours when playing the original DS titles. It's also a slightly heavier unit at 336 grams compared to the original's 235. In North America, the price will be $199, released in black, red and blue. In the UK, Nintendo have allowed retailers to set their own prices. So while Play and Shop 2 have set the retail price at $199, and they'll price the console itself at £179, Zavvi has predicted a £249 retail price, despite selling the device for £209.99. Confused? I know I am. Colours-wise, it will instead launch in blue, red and silver, and oddly does not come with an AC power adapter, although it does contain a 4GB SD card. Players will be able to transfer all account information, play coins, street pass data, unlocked hats and activity logs to the new device, but will need the original 3DS to do so. Curiously, the machine's new design does not include a second circle pad, meaning that it will need its own version of the Circle Pad Pro to get the best out of games such as Resident Evil Revelations. Nintendo also confirmed that the new Super Smash Bros. Game for the 3DS and Wii U will be developed by Namco Bandai. And also there's news that will the Xbox 720 Surface be a next-gen tablet controller? A new leaked document suggests that the Xbox Surface will consist of a stationary computing device and a tablet computer. The device will feature a 7-inch multi-touch LED screen with a resolution of 1280 by 720, as well as two IBM Power7 SCMs, whatever they are, each with 6 active cores. It will feature a custom 28 AMD GPU, I think nanometers, could be, as well as a 250GB optical disk drive, I can understand that, which can be expanded by USB flash memory. The original Microsoft Surface was a tabletop product built by Samsung and Microsoft, aimed at businesses and education, featuring a 40-inch display and a resolution of 1920x1080, with which Xbox Surface makes it possible for groups to share, groups of people to share, interact, and collaborate on the touchscreen. Another Xbox 20 leak suggests that the upcoming console will support cutting-edge 3D technology through Kinect 3D glasses, codenamed Fortaleza. This service will be implemented over Wi-Fi in 2014 and via 4G the following year. Kinect 2.0 will reportedly launch with the Xbox 720, featuring improved tracking and dedicated processing, and with a better play space and high definition. Which is a good thing, because the play space on the original Kinect, it's just, I've got a lazy boy in it, and it always gets in the way, and it just, there's just no room for the chair at all. So I end up, my character just sort of ends it up sort of looking like he's got something wrong with his leg, because the device can't see him, and it just sort of goes all over the place. But overall, I'd still rather have a great library of suitable games than the faff about with that, because the existing ones are just far from great. The new console is supposedly 6 times more powerful than the Xbox 360 and will include a Blu-ray optical drive, as well as always online technology. Mine is anyway when I use it, so I don't get that. So the rumours are that the Xbox 720 and its Kinect 2.0 sensor will be out next year, priced at surprisingly low, $299, which is about 190 quid. Then again, that's going to mean it's £299 in the UK. We also have the news that Assassin's Creed Utopia has been confirmed for smartphones. Ubisoft and Gree have teamed up to develop a social-themed spin-off set in the Stealth series universe, and producer Adrien Meunier said that the title will offer a true Assassin's Creed experience and revolve around building your own Assassin's Creed utopian colonial city. The mobile game will not have any direct links to Assassin's Creed 3, unlike the PS Vita game Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation, which I'll mention in a moment. Assassin's Creed 3 itself is in the works for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC. And the console edition will land on October 31st worldwide, but the PC version has recently run into delays. Ubisoft has yet to confirm which mobile platforms Assassin's Creed Utopia will be released for. Okay, so for Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation, this was announced during the E3 2012 press conference, where it's confirmed that it will feature the series' first ever female protagonist. The game will support cross-play with the PlayStation 3 edition of Assassin's Creed 3, allowing players to unlock bonuses in both games by trading goods. It will make use of the Vita's unique functions, incorporating its camera, touchscreens and near-field communication technology. Sony also announced a new Vita bundle to launch with the game. It will include a new crystal white model of the console, a 4GB memory card, and a copy of Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation. Okay, so that's your video games news for this week. And in a moment, I'll be looking, bringing you a look at some TV shows. I'm going to lie down, I think. Watching the past week, including Dead Boss and True Love. But first, I'm going to play another one of those songs. It's about that time of the week. It's one of those songs that's a guilty pleasure of mine. And this song is Richard Harris and MacArthur Park. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Richard Harris with MacArthur Park, and you're back with the DVD Fuse show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we'll have a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, the past couple of weeks really, starting with Dead Boss, which is on BBC Three every Thursday at 10:30. It's a new sitcom with Sharon Horgan from Pulling, which I found has some sharp writing in parts and puts her in the starring role of Helen Stevens, who's just gone down for 12 years for murdering her boss, even though she never did it. She's locked up with Christine, Bryony Hannah, and determined to get out as soon as possible, and starts putting in an appeal for her freedom. Alas, the prison is controlled by horrible Governor Margaret, Jennifer Saunders, who will deny her appeals for as long as she can. In addition, Helen's family are completely useless. They won't help her out financially, and her lawyer, Tony, Jeffrey McGiven from Have I Got News for You? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, slightly different set of initials, which is why he did that on the radio. But lawyer Tony is an absolute waste of space. In the first episode, Helen defied top dog Lizzie Roper, who wasn't about, by sitting at a table in the canteen and encouraged Christine to sit with her. Previously on the show, I mentioned the name of the series I couldn't remember the name of with Sharon Horgan was The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret, also starring David Cross. Now, I wanted to know when Series 2 would come out, as the storyline was clearly spread over two series, but I didn't know whether or not it had been cancelled, but I've since learned that it aired in the US over January and February. It also turns out the studio wanted a third series, but David Cross stuck with just two of them. Anyway, back to Dead Boss, and after three episodes, it's okay, but it's just far from brilliant. Certainly not a patch on pulling. Why they cancelled that, God alone knows. The fact it's co-written by Holly Walsh doesn't help. I find her about as funny as a fart in a bathtub. Also, that's been on this week. We have Veep, which is on Sky Atlantic every Monday at 10 o'clock. Now, this is a series which Armando Iannucci said is not the US version of The Thick of It. Well, yeah, I could see that, as Anna Chlumsky from In the Loop is playing a White House aide the moment it starts. In the first episode, Senator Selina Meyer, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, plays the Vice President of the USA, and she has to go on a fundraiser, which begins by being a disaster as she manages to offend everyone in the plastics industry, as well as the cornstarch industry and also the oil industry. This is all thanks to making one gaffe after another. And she ends up having to make a speech where every last comment about all of these must be taken out, which leaves her with hello and basically having to make a summary out of nothing at all. As a result, she drops another gaffe with an offensive word that she heard earlier, and they press her all over it. Now, overall, this doesn't feel like it has the gravitas of The Thick of It. However, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is still looking hot nearly 15 years after Seinfeld ended, and I think there's enough to stick with it for a while. There's only 8 episodes, however, so it won't take long to get through them all. Okay, so that's the first lot of TV shows watched from the past week or so. We're going to have a bit of music, and then I'll be back with the rest of them. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, so you're back with the DVD Food Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And this section, we're going to continue our look at some programmes watched in the past couple of weeks, starting with True Love, which is on BBC One and is still on the iPlayer now. Now, I was looking forward to True Love as it was first trailed, but then again, the trailer was on again, 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 again. And when it did come, the series that is, not the trailer again, it was pretty bog standard. And after 15 minutes of the first episode, I felt like I was being put into a coma given how pedestrian the storyline and the acting was. And Nick David Tennant was celebrating his wife Ruth's, Joanne Froggatt, 34th birthday. But at the same time, he witnessed the return of old flame Serena, Vicky McClure, and then slept with her. Serena also bumped into Ruth in the middle of the street at one point, and they had an awkward conversation with both of them reluctantly concluding they should meet up at some point. The kind of conversation which never leads to anyone meeting up again. And that was it. Episode 2 was a similarly dull affair, despite featuring assured performances from Ashley Walters as Paul and Lacey Turner popping up again as his wife Michelle. By the way, several of these characters sort of crossed over between episodes. While driving to work in a boring carpet flooring store, he notices a young woman sitting at the bus stop. Their eyes meet as he passes, and there's clearly a good flirt going on. The same thing happens the next day, and he can't get her out of his mind. He gets out of his car to witness her bus driving past him. He waves, she responds, and then he gets a piece of chalkstone and carves some words on the pavement. We later realise that this is an invitation to meet up the next evening, where she introduces herself as Stella, played by Jamie Winston, and they go back to her house for some rumpy pumpy. Before long, she tells him that her mum's not well and manages to get Paul to lend her £5,000, which comes from the joint savings account he has with his wife. Alas, as you'd expect, she gets on the train to visit her mum, says she'll call him later, and when he tries to phone her, when he hasn't had any contact from her for a while, he finds the phone line has been disconnected. In the end, Paul ended up leaving Michelle. I was about to give up at that point until I learned that episode 3 was one where Billy Piper is a teacher and Kea Scodelario is a schoolgirl and they have an affair. However, there was nothing at all titillating the episode and they got found out way too quickly and the rest was just too tedious for words. Each episode was a self-contained story, but there was some crossover between them. However, it just, from what I saw, it just didn't have the same strength as BBC One's recent drama series One Night might have, which was really good. But yeah, this was just, it was a pretender to the throne, shall we say. Also on recently, we had Rhea, Diary of a Teen Transsexual, which was on Channel 4, and was a one-off film that charts the ups and downs of one of Britain's youngest transsexuals. We saw, first of all, how she stopped looking for work and the dole was stopped. Then she got a job in a brothel where she was marketed as a ladyboy, which stopped her from taking the blockers, which blocked her male hormones from coming through. And then, as she was about to turn 18, the fact she was developing as a man just made things even harder for her, if you'll forgive the expression, to the point where she was being mocked in public and outed as a man on an evening in town. So, a bit of a sad tale all round, really. And that's basically how it left it. I think this was the second programme in total that they featured her. Maybe they'll have another one later on, I don't know. But, I think she's probably going to have the operation after that anyway. So, I don't know. It's not something I'd go through anyway. Then we have A Short History of Everything Else on Channel 4 every Wednesday at 10 o'clock, where comedian Griffiths Jones hosts this brand new comedy panel show using archived TV clips to challenge players to give a short history of everything else. Each week, Griff is joined by two regular team captains, Marcus Brigstocke and Charlie Baker, who, along with guests such as Kirsty Walker and Mickey Flanagan, try to prove that they remember more about everything else than the other team, adding their own irreverent interpretations along the way. Now for this programme, there's only 4 episodes in total, and I've seen the first 2 now, and it's worth watching for the clips, but there's very little comedy in it. Marcus makes the occasional decent wisecrack, but Charlie Baker is an utter waste of space. God knows why he's there. I'd never heard of him before he popped up on the Right Stuff panel recently. Anyway, so that's, was there anything good in that, those programmes? Well, yeah, Dead Boss, Veep, worth sticking with, I think. True Love, forget it. Short History of Everything Else. I'll stick with it because I say it's worth it for the clips, but the programme itself in general, not good. Okay, so I say that's the look back at the best and the worst of last week's TV. So we're going to have a bit of music and then I'll bring you the best of the coming week's TV. So this is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, so you're back for the last section of the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, for this week on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section we have a look at the programmes coming up in the next week, including Gordon Behind Bars, which is on Channel 4 tonight at 9 o'clock, and so it's over 4 episodes. Now Gordon Ramsay thinks it's time Britain's prisoners paid their way. There are 88,000 prisoners in the UK, and it costs the taxpayer £38,000 to keep each one of them locked up for a year. Gordon's given him 6 months to set up a successful food business behind bars. His aim? To get prisoners cooking food on the inside, to sell on the outside. He arrives at the Brixton Prison in South London, a Category B Victorian jail, packed with drug dealers, burglars, muggers and thieves, some very unsavoury characters. But first Gordon needs to pick 12 men for his Bad Boys Brigade business, but none of them can even scramble an egg. I've seen the trailer several times, it makes them all look tough and all the rest of it. I don't know, I'll watch one and see how it goes, I think, but I don't know. Also coming up, which I've not put on my list, Hell's Kitchen USA returns next Monday on ITV2 at 9 o'clock. Now, I do enjoy that. It does, obviously, we're a little bit later from when it gets shown in the US, but in the US, even if you found a way of watching it, it's all bleeped. They bleep him on Fox, I have to wait for it to go on ITV2 because it's just all left uncut with all the swearing in it. I mean, if it was maybe the odd swear word, it may be worth, you know, it was bleeped, it may be worth sticking with to save waiting so long for it to come on. But it's just like every other word, obviously, with Gordon Ramsay. So, you know, it's worth waiting for the ITV2 version. Also on out this week, it's on TV rather, is Line of Duty, which is on BBC Two tonight at 9 o'clock. So maybe watch that and then watch Gordon Behind Bars on Channel 4 Plus 1. So Line of Duty is a drama series, and when Steve Arnott is transferred to a police anti-corruption unit, he finds his target is the city's top detective, Tony Gates. Can Gates really be as good as he appears? Arnott must engage in a cat-and-mouse struggle to uncover Gates' secret. Starring Lenny James, Martin Compson, Vicky McClure, turning up again, Gina McKee, Neil Morrissey and Adrian Dunbar, it's one of those trailers for a drama that just looks like everyone's just being mean and moody for the sake of it. I don't know, it looks like it could be worth a watch. I just hope it's not like The Shadow Line, which I watched one episode of that and it was just boring. Dull. I'll give it a go anyway, this. A couple of films that are on this coming week as well. Raiders of the Lost Ark, that's on Saturday on BBC One at 6:30. Obviously not a premiere by any stretch of the imagination. But last time BBC One showed it, for that and the second film, and actually all three films, it was the first time they showed them in the proper widescreen ratio for the first time on BBC One in standard definition. Obviously it'll be on HD as well. But well worth watching properly. Also we have Lucky Number 11, which is on Sunday at Channel 4 at 10:50. And Paul McGuigan's Trixie Thriller stars Josh Hartnett as Slevin Kelevra, who arrives at his friend's New York apartment only to find it empty. He makes himself at home, but his peace is interrupted by employees of crime lord The Boss, who mistake him for his absent friend, who owes The Boss $96,000. The Boss makes Slevin an offer. Kill the son of his rival, the rabbi, and his debt will be wiped clean. But the rabbi soon gets hold of Slevin and makes a counter-offer. Meanwhile, cynical assassin Mr. Goodcat is playing both ends against the middle in what might be a long-term plan, while Slevin's neighbour Lindsay soon becomes his love interest. The result is a multi-stranded double-cross that can only have one lucky winner. Also starring Bruce Willis. Excuse me, I thought I could get away with not having another cough for the rest of the show. Bruce Willis, Lucy Liu, Morgan Freeman, Ben Kingsley. It's a fairly reasonable thriller, but it's one that starts off better than it goes along. But, you know, have a look at it anyway. Anyway, for now, that's everything for this week. So thanks to everyone who's listened. And check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. I'm going to finish with a song, though. And this comes from the soundtrack of Underworld Awakening, for which I brought you a review when it was out in the cinema in January, and is now out on Blu-ray 3D and DVD. It's Lacey Sturm from Flyleaf and Glenn Leonardo, and it's called Heavy Prey. This is 106.6.
106.6.